Hi, everybody. Welcome to Two Out the First. It is March 29th, 2023. I'm Ryan Ballengee. It's great to have you here with us for a Wednesday show. The Augusta National Women's Amateur starts today. Very exciting. First two rounds, Wednesday and Thursday, at Champions Retreat in Evans, Georgia, which is just down the road from Augusta National Golf Club. It's actually a place a lot of folks who are kind of VIPs and members like to stay during the Masters because they have, what, nines or courses from, what, I think it's Watson Player and Nicholas or Palmer Player. It's some great combination, but very, very nice facility. And they're going to play the first two rounds there, cut down to the top 30 in ties, have a practice day at Augusta National on Friday, and then Saturday they'll wrap everything up. That'll be on NBC, and then on Sunday the Drive, Chip, and Putt. So Golf Channel in the morning is a little nice little precursor to the week of the Masters, a nice little postscript or dessert after watching the Augusta National Women's Am. So take it how you want it, whatever food analogy you'd like to make. But that starts today. We got two stories for you, as the name of the show implies. A couple quick announcements, though. First, this show is now available as a video podcast on Apple Podcasts. So if you do watch this show on YouTube, or if you watch it or listen to it through a podcasting service, and you want to see the video version of this and just download it each day to your device as you wish, that's available as a method now. We're trying to figure out Spotify. They don't allow video podcast feeds directly, so we got to work with them directly. We'll figure that out over due course of time. But of course, you can still catch us as an audio version on every podcasting platform there practically is, on Golf News Net Radio, and then you can watch us on YouTube as well. As well, our video channels for Amazon Fire and Roku devices. Unfortunately for our Apple TV friends, that's going away at the end of the month. It's just kind of not worth the cost. So, two topics for today. First is that the Masters is ranked fourth in importance by Gary Player and Jack Nicklaus. And I think this is worth talking about for a couple of different reasons. And Golf Channel actually very rightly pointed this out, and I did not know this, but it gives them a chance to kind of bring themselves into the conversation. So let's start with Gary Player, right? Gary Player is one of five guys to have ever won the career Grand Slam. So he's got them all. He's got the Masters, the PGA, the U.S. Open, and the Open Championships. Won nine major titles. He's in one of the honorary starters for the Masters. He is the 1978 Masters champion. He has done the job. So he has a very unique perspective, and you can't be very unique, but you do have a unique perspective on this. And he was asked in an interview with the Daily Mail where he ranked all four men's major championships in terms of importance to him. And this is kind of setting the golf world on fire because he ranks the Masters fourth. So here's the quote from him. Quote, "But never mind the Masters. The Open is by far the greatest tournament on the planet. I rate the Open at 1, the U.S. Open 2, PGA 3, and Augusta 4. Four marvelous tournaments," end quote. And of course, that's kind of been taken as it is. And you go, wait, this guy's an honorary starter at the Masters. He shows up every year on the first tee. He's done this for a decade plus. And now he's saying that the Masters is fourth best. How is that humanly possible? And then you kind of dig in a little bit on the quote, and he explains himself a little bit. And I think really all of this comes down to how he feels about the age of the tournaments. And he explains that the Masters is the youngest of the majors. That's a direct quote from him. And because it's the youngest of the majors, he feels it might always be fourth, is kind of what he's implying, because it'll never catch up to the history of the other three, because they're all older. They're all in triple digits at this point. Obviously, the Masters is not yet in terms of existence. And unless they stop playing the U.S. Open, the Open, and the PGA for about 30 years, it's not going to even come close to catching up to any of them. So from that perspective, I guess that kind of makes sense. But people are kind of all aghast about it. And I think some of the reaction probably has to do with how Augusta National has been treating his son Wayne. Remember when Lee Elder had his opportunity as to be the honorary starter just before he passed away? He didn't hit a shot, but standing behind Lee Elder as part of the ceremony, it was really, really important because as the first African-American Masters contestant, Lee Elder is incredibly important in the history of the tournament and was incredibly important to Tiger Woods' life. And Wayne is standing there, Wayne Player standing there with a sleeve of Encore golf balls, which is a sponsor of Gary Player at the time. And I have no problem with Encore sponsoring Gary Player. Go for it. But in that moment, it was really not the right thing to do in an emotional situation to kind of flash a sponsor cameo, so to speak, kind of an integration that maybe a PR person might love, but super cringeworthy. And the Augusta National has not been particularly happy with Wayne since that happened. And from accounts, he is no longer welcome on the grounds. And so people think, okay, well, go back to that incident. Surely Gary Player is a little salty about that, and that's why he's ranking the Masters fourth. And there may be some influence on that. Don't get me wrong. I'm pretty sure there probably has to be some. You can't be thrilled about that. But then you've got people on Twitter calling for him to not be an honorary starter anymore and take it away. And how can Augusta National stand this? And maybe it's just going to be Tom Watson and Jack Nicklaus. Well, hold your horses on that. Because as Golf Channel rightly points out, and because this involves them, they know this. When Nicklaus was interviewed for a Golf Channel documentary called Jack, which first aired in 2017, and they air every now and then, Nicklaus said the Masters was fourth, and he's the one who's won it the most. He said, quote, "I have the U.S. Open as the number one tournament." Then he listed the Open Championship at number two, and he said that the Open preference between the two was because he's an American, and that for the rest of the world, the British Open is probably the number one tournament. So for him being an American, winning his national championship was very important. He ranked the PGA third, and then ranked the Masters fourth. And he said, quote, "The Masters falls fourth because it's not meant to be ahead of those others. The Masters tournament is not a championship. You can't rank a tournament ahead of championships," end quote. And if you think about those things, the names, the actual formal names of these tournaments, the U.S. Open is the U.S. Open Championship. The Open is the Open Championship. The PGA is the PGA Championship. The Masters is the Masters tournament. And for whatever reason, championship in Nicklaus's mind means more than tournament. Now, if you were going to make me try to make a distinction between the four majors, I think you would say, hey, you've got the Opens, although they aren't quite as open as they once were, right? They've got exemption criteria, and the Open Championship certainly isn't as open as it once was. It's nowhere near. At least the U.S. Open still has a good chunk of its field, you know, a good, 30-40% of the field comes from qualifying, comes from sectional and final qualifying. But the Open isn't really that way anymore. You've got like not even 15% of the field comes from Open qualifying. So the Open aspect of that doesn't mean something. But to Nicklaus, championship versus tournament means something, which maybe that explains how he feels about the Players' Championship. So if you asked him to include the Players' Championship, where does that fit as a championship against the Masters Tournament? It also might explain why his tournament on the PGA Tour is called the Memorial Tournament, not the Memorial Championship. He sees a very clear distinction between those things. So, to bring it all together, it seems like the greatest players of all time think the Masters, as an invitational tournament, is not as highly ranked as the others. And Nicklaus said in this interview from 2017 or whenever they put it together, maybe it was 16, 417, who knows. But he said, quote, "Most people would put the Masters number one, and that's okay. I'd put the Masters number one as far to play in and enjoy doing that kind of stuff. But as far as importance of the game and being American, the U.S. Open is number one," end quote. And I think if you ask people to rank the four majors, a lot of people would say the Masters is number one if you're in this country. If you're outside of this country, a lot of people would say the Open Championship. And maybe for some people, for foreign-born, the Masters is number one for them. But I think the Open with the longest history probably has that spot. And also because it's the only one outside of the United States, also has kind of increased its reputation among international golf fans over the years. And that all kind of makes sense. I don't think anyone would rank the PGA Championship number one for any reason. And no offense to the PGA Championship. It is a fantastic tournament, and it really is important to the history of golf. But I don't think anyone picks that as number one. So then you've got it down to the other three. And I think for a lot of golf fans, because they've become intimately familiar with Augusta National, because they see the same course every year, because of the drama, because of the smaller field, that ranks number one for them. And then they're all aghast when other folks who have accomplished a lot in the game might say, well, it's not my number one. It might be the one I want to win, which is the one Nicklaus said. This is the one tournament I wanted to win. I wanted to win the first major of the year. It was the one I put my entire year's work into, trying to win that major championship and start the year with a major championship win. But at the end, for whatever reason, for him, being an American is more important and winning the national championship is more important. I think if you ask a lot of people these days, the U.S. Open would fall to third or fourth in their ranking. But everyone's a little bit different. And I don't think necessarily we should be aghast that these guys have opinions and that they're willing to share them. Hey, it is what it is. So I don't think that they're necessarily wrong. Once you kind of read their explanation, I think Jax is very semantic in nature. What is a championship versus a tournament? And maybe that goes back to the history in the 1934, 1935 of, hey, let's call this an invitational tournament because it is the Augusta National Invitation Tournament, not the Augusta National Invitation Championship. So I don't know, but I think because of Wayne Player's situation with Augusta National, there's some thought that he's just salty. Gary Player's just salty. And I don't necessarily think that's the case. So wanted to go through all that because it made a whole lot of headlines. And I think when Golf Channel's story about it popped up and their interview with Jack, obviously they're talking about it because it's their production. But I think that makes total sense to me in terms of how the prism through which these guys are seeing it. But if you ask 10 other great professionals, I don't know exactly what they would come down with. And it would probably be a little bit different, probably spread out. And that's the great thing about the majors. They all do have a different character, a different quality, a different emotional pool. So, again, I don't think many would say the PGA Championship is number one, but you might get one. I don't know. Because, I mean, there are enough players over the years whose parents or they themselves were PGA of America professionals. And so for them, winning the PGA of America's championship, meant for professional golfers, albeit in a different context, is a very important thing for them. Okay, second story for today. We're going to get a little bit into some live stuff here. And I want to talk about a story from Alex Maselli, who's over at Sports Illustrated. I think it's important to note that Sports Illustrated's parent company has ownership over the Greg Norman brand, works to promote it. They do a lot of live golf content over there, and that's totally fine. But at this point, as I've harped on over the years with Golf Magazine, and they finally figured out over time, hey, it's a good idea to tell us your conflicts of interest, like when they worked with the Nicholas companies and their relationships with different clients and their own businesses that they own. At least they disclose that now. For a while, they didn't do that, and that was very troubling. I think SI needs to do the same for their live content. They need to explain the relationship with Greg Norman. I don't care if it influences or not. You need to put that out there, that there is a financial relationship there, whether you want to say it has anything to do with it or not. But they've talked about it in some articles related to Liv, and particularly for their golf ranking, which has been just torched by everybody. But if you're going to talk about Liv and you have a business relationship with the guy who's the commissioner / CEO, I think you have to disclose that every single time. That all said, Maselli has done some really good reporting. He's an attorney by trade. He knows the ins and outs of the court cases. He's been following those kinds of things. And so he's kind of doing some reporting here about where Liv is as a business going into Orlando, what they feel their business prospects are for the future, some changes they may make. We talked a little bit about this with Alan Shipnick, his reporting that he did after the Tucson event. Now we have this leading into Orlando. And Maselli said he talked to 8 different sources within Liv. Now, of course, you have to kind of take that with multiple caveats. One, that all of this could be through rosy lenses, right? I mean, everything is said in Liv terms, really in rosy terms. There hasn't been yet a break within the ranks that there's kind of people who are like, this stinks. Maybe there have been whispers of guys wanting to leave or potentially looking at a way to try to get back into the PGA Tour. But by and large, there has been kind of player unity about this concept. And I think they're becoming pariahs in a lot of golf circles, has unified themselves around each other, and that kind of makes sense. So Maselli says that Liv is actually looking at expanding the number of players that they could have next year from 12 teams to 15 teams. So you go from 48 to 60 players. I don't know how that works very well from a shotgun start standpoint, because now you've got 48 players. You can have players on 16 holes and threesomes. So would you play 15 foursomes and do it that way? I think that'd be kind of awkward, but maybe you can do it in still a reasonable amount of time and get it done having 15 holes. Or do you spread it out a little bit differently? Because obviously you don't have 20 holes and you're not going to have A and B, I don't think. Maybe you do. I don't know. Maybe you have A and B on a par 5. But I thought that was interesting from the shotgun start standpoint. Again, where do you find those players? Now, Maselli says that they are looking at trying to pull players from the International Series on the Asian Tour, Order of Merit, or players that they sign, or players that are just brought in with contracts. I get the sense from that talking point that Liv may be realizing their opportunity to sign big players to big contracts is going away, and that they probably aren't going to pick off a whole lot of more big players. So what they're trying to do is shift the financial onus of operations to the teams themselves, which they own 75% of, and they have loaned, quote-unquote, loaned money to operate. So they've kind of set this up as a scheme for the player, for themselves and the players. Okay, we will front you the money, and you don't have to pay us back said money until we sell the team, sell the franchise to somebody. Now, who knows if they have buyers for these things? I don't see the inherent value of them, and I'm not sure a whole lot of people do yet at this point because Liv doesn't make much money. But the idea here is they're trying to get away from Liv signing the players and taking that expense, and they're trying to turn it into a franchise model like you would see in other sports leagues where teams would sign a player, they'd bring them on for, you know, whatever the yearly salary is, yearly signing bonus, and then they would go play together. And then there has been talk of, again, trying to create a more of a relegation system, and it sounds like the players who are in the bottom three or four are going to be relegated out of Liv, and they'll bring in people to replace them, presumably from the International Series Order of Merit or other free agents that can be signed. There's the issue, of course, that a bunch of players that sign with Liv, especially the early players, have multi-year deals. They cannot be relegated until after, like, at least the third season. So they're going to have to explain that to people, that the following players are exempt from relegation and they're going to be around regardless. Here's the spots that are available. And there was some mention of that already, I think, about like Scott Vincent getting relegated in the Tucson event. Like, we're two in, man. Like, I understand there are a lot of guys who are just not competitive on Liv, but I think the idea of relegation, talking about that so early without a clear explanation of who can be in regardless, doesn't help the product. And I think this is a continuation of the big bet on this team concept. Need more teams. Well, I don't think you need more teams. I think you need fewer teams, to be honest with you. I would rather, if you were a Liv fan, I don't think the 12 teams of four is your best method. I think eight teams of six is better, because then you have a team competition that probably is closer, and you could have money that goes out to most teams. Instead of, you know, instead of paying 3 out of 12, you could pay 3 out of 8. That's a little bit better. Or you could do 5 out of 8 and use your purse system to make it a little bit different. Spread it among fewer teams, which means you could keep the current pay structure you have more or less and not flatten it out quite as much. But that money is now going to the teams themselves, presumably to run their finances, to sign players in the future, to pay for having merch and a general manager and a social media team and having employees. And I don't think there's enough money there in the team format to make it viable, because if you're trying to sign players away from the PGA Tour or the DP World Tour, the most money you could earn in a season of Liv for your team is the $3 million per individual event times 13. Well, that's $39 million. Not everyone's going to win every event. So if you had the $39 million, yeah, you could probably sign players. You could obviously hire people as individual positions. You don't have to pay them that much. I mean, we're talking under a million probably for that, maybe even under 500,000. But if you're a team that struggles and doesn't do well, and there are plenty of those on Liv that struggle to make the medal stand ever, then the economics just simply don't work. It's just not there. So that's why Liv is talking about taking some of the money for the individual tournaments and moving it to the team purses and then spreading it out that way. And they've obviously tightened expenses. Apparently, according to Maselli, they've spent something like $180 million extra dollars than they wanted to spend in the last year. Either unapproved expenses or expenses they thought were important, but they knew they were too costly. I mean, that's a rounding error to the Saudi Public Investment Fund, but $200 million effectively is nothing to sneeze at. That's a lot of overspending. And I think the Public Investment Fund's directors are now kind of having bigger influence over the day-to-day, and they want to quickly move this thing away from bleeding money to a scheme where they could pay themselves back over time if they can sell the franchises. And the idea of having gone from 10 events as the kind of proposed second season to a 14-event schedule, effectively 1 year ahead in the contract writing, I don't think people are, I mean, I think some people are upset about that, but if you read the contract, you kind of knew that was possible. You knew that was an option for Liv in the Saudis. So I don't think there's anything upset about that. And I don't think they plan on really changing the schedule. I don't think they plan on expanding the number of tournaments in future years. Seems like people that sign with Liv are pretty well aware that if they qualify for the majors and they play the 14 events, they've got an 18-event schedule. Maybe you play a couple of others on the Asian Tour and call it a day. And depending on what happens with the DP World Tour, I don't even necessarily think the result of that arbitration case will mean a whole lot to the players on Liv. Because I think a lot of them are comfortable and happy playing fewer tournaments in the grand scheme of things. Is it that many fewer than their PGA Tour careers or DP World Tour careers? No, not really. Especially if you throw in a couple of international series events. But if you then have access to the DP World Tour, are you just going to up and take starts on the DP World Tour? I really don't think so. I don't think that's going to be the case. So if that even comes down, I don't think it really means a whole lot other than what it is kind of now, where guys show up and it's like, this is weird. You haven't been here in a while and you don't even play, you don't even go here anymore kind of stuff, to borrow a line from Bianca Belair. So I don't see a big change there. It seems like Liv is finding some footing with a few sponsors. A Mexican, I think, energy company or oil company signed on to be a sponsor of Sergio Garcia's team. And I'm sure there will be other people who sponsor teams. I think when we first talked about this concept and the backlash against Saudi money, and that still very much exists, but there's still a percentage of the population that doesn't care. And that's okay. That is important to Liv to exist, that you have to cash in on the people who are either disillusioned former PGA Tour sponsors or people who just simply don't care about the source of the money. That's your pool. That's where you can get sponsorship money. Who knows what that money is for? Who knows the amount? Who knows the duration? All of those things can continue on, but I think if the ratings for this week again go down, and when they were down 30%, they went from 0.2 to 0.14. So you went down 30% your first time out. If you go down again from 0.14, let's just say to 0.10, now you've lost half your audience in three tournaments. And that's bad, because once your next tournaments are not in this country. They're in Australia, where it should be well received. Sounds like there's a lot of ticket sales already done, maybe sold out. But Australians have largely supported this concept, largely because of Greg Norman's involvement. And then you've got one in Asia right after that, back-to-back weeks. So no one's going to watch that in this country, not on tape delay. No one watches anything on tape delay. So I don't think that's going to go particularly well. And then you come back, and now you've got to start figuring out the rest of your year. I think they'd be so far behind the eight ball. I don't know. I'm very curious how that will all work out in the end. But at least for now, that's kind of where things are on Liv, and they play this week at Orange County National. We'll go from there. Well, our Texas Open starts tomorrow, TPC San Antonio. We've got the Astara Chili Classic on the Korn Ferry Tour. We've got nothing on the DP World Tour. We've got nothing on the PGA Tour Champions. So not as quite a busy week, but we do have obviously some key tournaments and very, very excited about that and lead into the Masters. We'll have a show tomorrow for you on 2 of the First. Very excited about that. Getting into some of the stuff from Anwa, and I'm sure there'll be some other stuff to talk about, including how we rank majors apparently. And maybe Dottie Pepper will say, like, the Dumaurier Championship should be first in everyone's hearts. Who knows? I don't know. But we'll get to that tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the show or watching it, depending on how you consume it. We appreciate it. Follow me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. Get a hold of me, Ryan, at thegolfnewsnet.com. If you are listening to us through a podcast platform, smash that 5-star button. Help us reach more people. Subscribe to the show. Leave a comment. Same thing on YouTube. Like and follow and subscribe. Leave a comment. Happy to talk to you, as always. And we will talk to you tomorrow with a new show of 2 of the First. Have a great day, everybody.